You're listening to DraftKings Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Mike Marty Schottenheimer passed away.
Why do you sound so happy?
How did you say that?
Yeah, you're very excited.
That was wrong tone.
I was not excited.
What happened?
Unbelievable. I was merely pointing out that a Browns legend had passed away.
Hold on. That was unbelievable.
Hey, guys, Marty Schottenheimer died. Hey.
Hold on.
And maybe the greatest coach to never win a Super Bowl.
Okay, I mean. Wait a minute. Let's just settle down.
Shoddy.
Let's all settle down.
Do you hear?
We need to examine what it is that just happened because the tone and vigor that Stugatz just delivered the news because he wanted to be the first. It was strange, okay? It was a strange reaction to a death. This just happened live in front of all of us. We're mortified. He shared the news of a death the way that you would share with others. Hey, my friend had a bouncing baby boy, his first child. There was an enthusiasm about death that is off-putting, mortifying, and was all about Stugatz just simply trying to deliver news before anyone else got the news that Marty Schottenheimer had passed away, which is not the most respectful way to speak about this stuff.
He passed away at the age of 77, and now armed with hindsight, a minute of it. I'm thinking back to it. I did deliver it like it was his 77th birthday.
Yes, yes. And so what I would like some help with, Mike, before the end of this segment and before the end of the show today, is I would like to play for the audience a real, live, authentic Stugatz moment where he did not know he was on the air, in which Stugatz blurted to us the news of Marty Schottenheimer's passing the way he would have if Marty Schottenheimer had arrived with a gift cake on our doorstep. Hey, guys, it's Marty Schottenheimer. It was strange.
Wrong tone, no doubt about
yes,
it.
Yes, but here's one of the many reasons why I am not going to tell Stugatz how to grieve, even though I don't think there was anything in the way of grief in Stugatz's delivery of that news. Yesterday, I found it interesting, Stugatz, because an unusual number of people were disappointed in me because I did not speak of the death of Pedro Gomez. Now, there was a reason that I did not do that, and it's not because I'm not respectful or I am flippant at all times and don't care about things, but I made a conscious decision that I did not want to talk about that yesterday on the air because I didn't want to emotionally screw up our entire Super Bowl show because of how it hit me, how it hurt, and I was not prepared to talk about it in a way that was made for public consumption. But some people were disappointed that and found it disrespectful that I had not spoken about Pedro Gomez's passing at the age of 58, a longtime Latin pioneer, a guy who led the way for some of us in terms of showing us that it was possible to get to ESPN and look that way and be someone who looked different than everyone around him at ESPN.
Just quickly, because I hate the grief police, like people, hey, why didn't Dan say anything? First off, I've been doing the show with Dan for 20 years. He loves Pedro. He respects Pedro. Pedro has been on this show, and Dan was hurting yesterday. So, I mean, I just hate when people try to point that
out. No, but it's okay. But so I tell them for next time so that they understand, because they were disappointed by me not saying it as if sports is bigger than life. I think you know me well enough by now to know that I know that sports are not life and death, and that every once in a while life and actual death creep into here. One time, I think the last time something like this landed quite this way for me, although Pedro's hit me harder than the other one if we're doing grief comparisons, but John Saunders on the air, he died when we were on the air, and we didn't know how to react, and there was shock, and we were trying to do funny around it. And next thing you know, Billy Ray Cyrus is on with us, and it's confusing and weird. And I just didn't want that to happen yesterday when we were on the air doing the Super Bowl show. There's enough weird stuff happening around us right now that makes the degree of difficulty on what we're doing something that's unseen around here. But I will tell you that that one landed on me in a way that I still have a sickness in my stomach about the mortality in it, because I grew up with this guy in this business, and I did want to wait to talk to Greg Cody about it, because Greg also knows Pedro Gomez and knows him personally and can speak to at a different time in America and a different time in Miami, when there were two newspapers that mattered, and it was the Miami News and the Miami Herald, and they were competing, and they were the local ESPN of the time in the playground for whatever ESPN would become to us in our dreams. This is the playground for kids like me, where people played with Greg Cody and Pedro Gomez, and Pedro was someone who looked like all the kids that I grew up with. Pedro was someone, and there were plenty at the Miami News and the Miami Herald, but it was not something you would have found in American newspapers at the time. And Pedro parlayed that to give all of us in Miami, the Armando Salgueros and me and Jorge Sedano and all those Cuban kids, had a little bit of a, Izzy Gutierrez, had a little pipeline to what it would look like at ESPN if we got over there. And Greg, you remember Pedro. Pedro had to be in his 20s when he started. The same path as me and Greg, the same exact path where he was on a newspaper path and he was working at the Miami. That's probably where you knew him, right? Miami News?
Yeah, when he worked for the Miami News and then the Herald, I think I've known him since the late 80s or certainly in the 90s. And then we'd fallen out of touch for years, to be honest. And we reacquainted, ironically, at... when Jose Fernandez died in, I think, late September 2016. And that was a tragic circus, the aftermath of that, as you recall. And everybody was here, including Pedro for ESPN. And that was a 2 or 3 day thing where we were spending all our day at Marlins Park, and the crowds were there, and it was really hectic. And Pedro was there, and he and I sort of reacquainted then. We had lunch once, and I was reminded, wow, I've missed this man, because he was just so kind. You know, we'd fallen out of touch for so long that he could have just, you know, blew me off. But he approached me and you know, it's just, he was one of the kindest men I've ever known. I can say that. And, yeah, it really hit me hard, the mortality of it, because here we are, after Jose Fernandez had died. Pedro's a little bit younger than me. And to look back then, and his smile was magnetic, and to look back then and think that man had a little over 3 years to live is just astounding to me. And it just shakes you at your core, particularly when you're older.
So words fail, and I didn't think that this was something that I could do yesterday, and I don't know whether I will do it particularly well here, because, as I said, words fail. And I understand when in eulogies sometimes what ends up happening is we overpraise the dead, or we give over positive because we're trying, you know, funerals are for the living. We're trying to cope. We're trying to heal, and saying nice things about someone that we may not have said when they were around makes us feel better, makes the living and the grieving and the sharing feel better about it. What I will tell you about Pedro Gomez, beyond being the kind of pioneer that me and Sedano could follow and have a path where we sort of understood, and he's just a few years older than me, but was older enough at that formative time, right? Where I'm 16 and he's 22, right? He's just starting, and I'm like, okay, this can be done. This can be done from here. I don't see a whole lot of people who look like me, but in Miami, it's not the weirdest thing in the world. So there's that professional pioneering thing of, I think, Greg, from among the group in Miami, was he the first to arrive at ESPN? Was there another person from, I guess, was Hank Goldberg there before Pedro Gomez was? He probably was. Hank Goldberg
he
was
probably was.
Yeah. I think Hank was at WIOD actually at the time, him and Neil Rogers, and then came over.
Okay. So anyway, so there's that part of it that is formative, and you've seen the professional path that Greg and I have taken since then. Journalism matters to us. Newspapers, careers in this stuff matter to us. We've taken great care to try and make careers and livelihoods out of that. So there's that part of it over to the side, and it's much smaller than the part that is what hit me yesterday or 2 days ago and made me feel like I did not have the right words to talk about this in a way that wouldn't derail us for the entirety of a show after Super Bowl Monday or after Super Bowl Sunday. And what I would say of Pedro Gomez in terms of words failing when everyone just keeps arriving at some form of kind, just so kind, trying to articulate different ways of just so kind. Just like Tim Kirkshen and some of these other people in our life where we can't imagine saying a bad thing about that person because they are a tribute, an echoing, moving tribute to the simple grace in human decency. This was a man who left with the people who will now mourn and grieve him, the living. This is a man who left us with an indelible imprint of what it is like to treat other people well, with simple human decency. After the last 4 years, America's experience in this country where we can't agree, Stugatz, on something as simple as the word matters. Do Black lives matter? Like, do they matter? It's just the most benign of like verbs. Do they matter? We can't agree on that. You will get no disagreement from anybody on Pedro Gomez was uncommonly decent. He treated other people very well. And I don't know anybody, Greg. I don't know that if I went on a hunt now where I was doing the investigative reporting and the reporting that Pedro Gomez did well, that I would find anybody who would have anything bad to say about that dude because of the gentle, warm light in the simplicity of human decency.
Yeah, when we reacquainted in the wake of Jose Fernandez's death, what he did was make me feel special. And I don't know how or why he did it, but you know, he's the big shot from ESPN. He's there with a camera crew. He's in a suit. You know, he's doing live stuff. And I'm just the local columnist who had fallen out of touch with him. Frankly, I didn't even know if he remembered me. It had been a long time. And he came up to me like we were old friends, and he made me feel like a big shot. And it's weird to say, but, you know, when you have the ability to be such a light that you let other people shine, it's pretty remarkable. And I don't know a lot of people like I remember Pedro Gomez. I really don't.
It's uncommon, right? It's not a thing that you appreciate day to day. I don't know who you would say it of the people in our lives, because we all have these weird and funny prickly personalities, but I can't imagine a one of us ever getting on the wrong side of someone like Tim Kirkshen. None of us could imagine it, right? There's just somebody there who is uncommon in terms of his human touch about being somebody who is relentlessly himself, relentlessly comfortable with the dorkiness in himself, and just makes other people feel good because it seems like Tim Kirkshen is fundamentally incapable of making someone else feel bad. Pedro Gomez was an uncommon personality at ESPN and in sports media in a business that is just soaked with petty insecurities and all sorts of unearned ego and people on television who wouldn't treat Greg Cody that way. Greg Cody came by that appraisal not because he's a lifelong cynic, but because, generally speaking, the big shot in the suit in television in a career that is really wrapped in great vanity over insecurities, most people would have big-timed Greg Cody. Most people would have not remembered Greg Cody, one of the guys along the path that Pedro Gomez climbed where we could all follow him, all of us in Miami. And I can't remember anybody before him, Greg. I didn't follow Goldberg. I was not somebody who was looking at Goldberg and saying, man, that's my path. That's how I get there. I was somebody who was looking at Pedro Gomez, and I was saying, huh, That's something that can happen, huh? That's small little Miami. Small little Cuban Miami. I can't remember anyone before that. Maybe him and the sports editor Leo Suarez, like when I like two people that I associate with. Wait a minute. People who are really Miami can go ahead and represent America that way. For me, a kid who's only 6 years younger than him.
Well, what struck me when I heard the news that he had passed at 58 was the immediate reaction, because, you know, not being Hispanic, I don't think of him first as a trailblazer. I just thought of him as the kindness and just the personality and the warmth. But the fact that he was important as a trailblazer, that's what came off in the immediate reaction. Just all of the people, Sedano, everyone who looked at Pedro as sort of a forefather who led them. That's special too. Not just that he was such a kind person, but that he really shone a light on a path for so many like yourself. And that's a whole different level to why he's being remembered just so fondly.
Mike, I'm going to need some production help from you here, because what arrived yesterday for me in terms of hurting and stuff that I was afraid to be able to get the energy back on the show where we're talking about Stugatz holding the hammer and shuffleboard. I just want to marvel as a group right now. I just for those of you who were just really mad and disappointed that I didn't talk about Pedro Gomez yesterday, I just want to know if you're the same people who are perpetually complaining about me being a grief eater, because it was being demanded and requested like a piano bar yesterday. People felt awfully comfortable telling the grief eater, hey, where's your grief? Give us your grief. You're disrespecting Pedro Gomez because you're not giving us your public wailing, sobbing grief.
I'm glad you didn't go there on Super Bowl Monday.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you said what you said, and it was eloquent and beautiful, though, so now I kind of have my second thoughts about it.
I should have said it yesterday, but yeah. I don't know whether, like, because I'm joking here, I'm trying to make a joke so that I can get the show back to the previous mood that we're talking about. What I'm telling you is that news landed with that I still have it in my, I physically still have it in my stomach, that news landing during the Super Bowl where I'm like, what do you mean this light has been extinguished? Like, I'd like to fancy myself someone who's somewhat aware. I would like to fancy myself someone who knows a little bit about how fragile and delicate and precious human life can be, and that these moments are not promised to us. But the finality of that is a hole in my stomach 48 hours later that I don't know is going to go anywhere anytime soon, because of how awful it felt to sort of like, what do you mean that's it? What do you mean I can't text him again? What do you mean that I've got to live with the regret of, you know, I didn't return his last text? What do you mean?
I'm glad that you got to decide when you were going to say what it is that you wanted to say about Pedro. You did not afford me that same opportunity when my mom passed away.
Honestly, you have the opportunity right now, Sugat, to correct whatever you said about Marty Schottenheimer to start the hour.
Hey, Marty Schottenheimer died.
No, not the right
thing. That's exactly how you said it.
It was so weird. You have it? You have it? Let's play that sound next so that people can hear for themselves what that sounds like. This was mortifying.
Hey, it's Mike Ryan. I've been watching sports for a long time now. As an adult, a lot has changed. A lot has changed since I turned 21 in the world, but once I was able to enjoy sports with the wonderful taste of Miller Lite, I knew that there was no topping this. I mean, I think back then, instant replay was barely used in other sports outside of football. So when I wanted to complain about referees, I would get all mad, and then I would take a sip of that Miller Lite, cool myself down, take a beat, and realize there are more important things, like the great taste of Miller Lite. Less filling and only 96 calories, the original light beer since 1975. You remember all those old John Madden ads? I still view them on YouTube occasionally. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
We're welcoming aboard the pirate ship Amin El Hassan. He enjoys Greg Cody. There are two people in my life, I think, that enjoy Greg Cody more than anyone else in my life. And I believe those two people to be Amin El Hassan and Izzy Gutierrez. I believe if we had a feud or a beef between, who do you think would win that, Amin, between you and Izzy? Who loves Greg Cody Tuesdays more, you or Izzy? Who would win?
Oh, man, I think Izzy would actually win that one.
Izzy's no longer. Greg, my love for you runs deep, but I just don't have the track record, the longevity that Izzy has.
The reason I'm bringing you in, though, even though you're second place in the loving Greg Cody category, is simply because I thought you would enjoy that Greg Cody has been better, because after all these years, we have discovered that Greg Cody is better doing the radio show, energy, knowing what his awareness is, if he is on a landline and he's just pretending like he's doing Kornheiser's radio show. He's got to pace around. He needs the energy. And I thought you would enjoy being in the Zoom watching Greg Cody, because he says any performer, any entertainer prefers to prowl around on stage, not just sit there.
So I literally was watching, and I could see Greg, and I see his microphone, his computer microphone, and he's in the background holding his phone, and I figured he was on a call while we were waiting to get started. I didn't realize this is how he's doing the show.
He's more alert, he's better, he's smarter somehow, but he's right about the prowling, Dan. There's something about prowling. Eddie Murphy, Raw or Delirious, when he's prowling around that stage, it is a confident, different Eddie Murphy. If he was just sitting on a chair, that would not be nearly as good. I think that's what's going on with Greg.
I think Bill Cosby sat in a chair doing comedy, and we saw how that worked out. Anyway, moving on. I want to get to, speaking of comedy, what Stugatz did that was a genuine, authentic Stugatz moment that none of us know what to do with. I will play that in a moment for Greg Cody and Amin El Hassan. What I will also play in a moment for Amin El Hassan and Greg Cody, and I don't think Greg Cody has heard this either, but we delighted yesterday in laughing, at tears in our eyes laughing, at the way that Lou Dobbs once tried to pronounce a Spanish word for a Mexican city. Greg Cody, have you seen, I've got two questions for our co-hosts here. Greg Cody, have you seen or heard the Lou Dobbs sound I speak of?
I have not heard the recently fired Lou Dobbs saying that.
No. That'll work for our purposes. The question for Amin El Hassan is, in the history of laughter, Amin, have you ever seen anything funnier?
And this one is right up there on the Mount Rushmore.
Okay, so we are going to get to that sound in a second. But first, a little bit of promotional stuff for you. We have Mystery Crate this week, and Chris Cody is fired up about Mystery Crate. I've never seen him like this about Mystery Crate, and I think I know why. Because Ron McGill does this wonderful show every year, Valentine's Day, over 20 years, where it's Sex and the Animals, where he does a scientific show about sex and the animals. And on Valentine's Day, it's wonderful. It's just great and it's funny. And he retired it. And it's very profitable. People love to pay for it. He had retired it. And I don't know how you guys recreated it, Chris, but you're doing a Valentine's Day edition of Mystery Crate that will have, this is a valuable show. If we put this show on television, we could sell that hour to somebody because of how good it is in terms of enjoying being informed about the animal kingdom while laughing at the stupidity of animals having sex.
Oh, we learn a lot. We laugh a lot. We learn a little bit about Ron McGill. I don't want to have any spoilers, but you learn about McGill because you're talking about the sex with the animals. It leads to just talking about, that's all I'm going to say. Yep. You'll learn a lot about Ron McGill in this.
Chris, I'll give a spoiler. The original name for the show was Sex with the Animals.
Sex with the Animals. Yeah, that's poorly named. You were in on it, correct? What can you tell us as a way of teasing Mystery Crate here? You were in on it. Was it everything I'm describing? Was it magical?
That absolutely was magical. The only thing that I regret is that apparently the real show, there's a PowerPoint slide that happens. Obviously, because this is a podcast, you guys will not see the PowerPoint. You'll just hear our reactions to Ron describing these different things.
Maybe you can talk to Juju, Chris, about getting a video accompaniment of some sort to go with that. Mystery Crate is going to drop on Friday. We've got Supodities out the wazoo. South Beach Sessions, Mike, you thought this was interesting. We talked to a couple of the Deadspin, former Deadspin founders, the names most associated with Deadspin. And for people of a certain age, Deadspin brought in this entire new age of the internet rules. The internet takes everything over in sports media. They brought it in, and then you saw Deadspin die or become a different version of itself. And we're talking to a couple of the original caretakers of what that website was, about what it is right now.
Drew McGarry, Tommy Craggs. This one's been eagerly anticipated. We've been sitting on this one for a while. Ready to drop it. That drops tomorrow.
And how about Stupidity, Stugatz? What do we got going on there?
We've got Chris Sims coming on today. This quarterback carousel is unlike anything we've ever seen. So Chris Sims is going to talk about it with us. And then later this week, we are going to have Dwight Freeney on again, who was great last week with us. But I told Dwight, unless he comes with a Hall of Famer, Peyton Manning, he's not coming back on. So that is the arrangement I've made with Dwight Freeney.
Dwight Freeney is really good.
He's great. No, he's great. And he's a really nice guy. He and I are playing golf. I'm looking forward to that. But Dwight Freeney will be on, hopefully with Peyton Manning, because he won't be if he doesn't bring him.
Okay, so with Peyton Manning, and there is some football we can get to at some point. The ratings on the Super Bowl were the worst since 2007.
There is a better than 30% chance Dwight Freeney is a permanent co-host of Stupidity, given the vibes that I caught off the last episode.
I spoke to him yesterday. I would place it at better than 50% right now.
Well, what's happening, and I would imagine, Mike, you remember the glory days of 790. Whenever Stugatz would get on the phone, there'd be a guest. An athlete would call in. It doesn't matter. It could be Leroy Horde. It could be anybody. An athlete would call, and if he was good for 10 minutes on the radio, Stugatz offered him an afternoon show or a midday show. Like, Stugatz, no, you guys think we're kidding. Stugatz would get up from the microphone whenever he came into contact. You became friends with Baselli? Like, somebody is good for 7 minutes on the radio, and basically, Stugatz wants to go straight to banging, straight to sex. How can I hire you? How can I make you a star? How can I make money off you, and how can I get you to do my job for me by being a famous athlete?
One of the shows had Mark Duper on, and Duper was so great. Like 6 minutes of greatness Duper gave that radio show. I had never heard Mark Clayton speak in my life, but I decided right then and there I wanted the Marx Brothers as a radio show. I called Dupe and told him to get it done. He couldn't get a hold of Clayton. I mean, but you're right. I mean, that's what I do.
Mike, but how right am I about those glory days of 790 radio, the very early days where Stugatz would just enjoy 10 minutes of an interview with an athlete, and next thing you know, offering him a midday show. I could sell ads off your ass, baby.
Yeah, you're impressionable, trying to make it in this business. Who can you help me in terms of guests with? I'll try to sell you a show.
I really feel like Stugatz could be guilty of some Me Too stuff from within that, in terms of taking abusive...
He wasn't trying to Me Too Lawrence Maroney. He was just trying to use him for guests.
That's exactly right. He's already parlayed. He thinks he's parlayed already Dwight Freeney into Peyton Manning. So that's a reason enough to listen to Stupidity, see if Stugatz can make his way up the ladder to Peyton's places. He'll be filming Peyton, taking a cut of Peyton places before he watches it.
I parlayed Charlie's grandfather into Tom Brady and Rory. I mean,
isn't Matt Lauer with reportedly a button under his desk. This is Stugatz trying to sell a Philip Merling show just because Philip Merling can get him a guest.
So we will talk about the unctuous Stugatz in a moment, because I really don't understand what happened at the beginning of the last segment. So, Amin, Cody, you're going to love reliving this, and Amin, you're going to howl with laughter, because Stugatz did not know we were on the air. So I want you to hear and allow to fully marinate how Stugatz decided to deliver the fairly thudding and terrible news that Marty Schottenheimer had passed away. This is Stugatz in a private moment talking to all of us, informing us for the first time of something that is going to hit us in the face and be pretty unpleasant.
Mike, Marty Schottenheimer passed away.
Why did you say that?
Yeah, you're very excited about it.
I want you.
Mike, it's Marty Schottenheimer's birthday today.
It's so wildly inappropriate. I don't understand. He was delighted, to share the news of someone's passing.
Mike, Marty Schottenheimer passed away.
What?
Mike, Marty Schottenheimer passed away. Mike, Marty Schottenheimer passed away. Marty Ball.
It's the same tone I've heard Stugatz use when he's got like some sort of fantasy secret all of a sudden.
Like a bet.
Mike? Mike Isner's playing and getting good odds.
Mike, it's moving day at the TPC.
What what happened?
Moving day.
It was moving day. And, yeah. This is so inappropriate. The idea that you delivered this, hey, Mike Schottenheimer, moving day to the sky.
Mike, Marty Schottenheimer passed away.
If you could picture him saying good news before delivering that. Good news.
Let's imagine
Mike, Marty
that.
Schottenheimer passed away.
Let's imagine.
Mike, great news. Mike, Marty Schottenheimer passed away.
So strange, Stugatz.
I'm strange. Marty Schottenheimer passed away.
I was just trying to inform Mike that, you know, an old Browns legend was no longer with us.
Thank you for informing him.
We appreciate your affirmation. So let's get to Greg Cody hearing the Lou Dobbs sound because, I mean, let's give it a little more context because I made a mistake thinking that Lou Dobbs was trying to say Guadalajara, and this is funny for a number of different reasons.
Understandably so.
He wasn't?
He was not trying to say Guadalajara, but here's the context you need here for this, Greg Cody, and we went into some of this yesterday, but just Lou Dobbs in general is funny. Lou is funny. Dobbs is funny. His face is funny. And this guy represents a whole decades of just people like that being on television, very comfortable talking about minorities when they don't know anything about minorities, including to how to pronounce some of our difficult words. So I did not have it right. He was not trying to pronounce the Mexican city of Guadalajara. What was he trying to say?
Wixla.
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 So Wixla, does that start with an H?
It's with an H. If you actually Google Wixla, you could understand how this possibly happened to Lou Dobbs.
Well, one of the reasons or ways that it happened is clearly he hadn't talked to anybody before the show about how to pronounce it. He went in there with the confidence. Does that have an X in it? Does Wixla have an X in it?
It has. It's H-U-I-X-T-L-A.
Isn't there on a prompter? Like on the prompter, usually when I've read the prompter, they spell it out phonetically because nobody cares about the actual spelling. They just want you to say it right.
Somebody may have undermined Lou Dobbs. A producer may have undermined Lou Dobbs, but I'm choosing to blame Lou Dobbs and an overconfidence about his fluency in Spanish. Nah, I got this. I can do television. Been doing it all my life, young man. I'll go out there and I will just wing it because you know why? I am Lou Dobbs. And then he walks onto the set, Cody, and this is how he decides to pronounce a Spanish word.
The caravan of mostly Central American immigrants is now in the Mexican city of Guadalajara tonight. The caravan of mostly Central American immigrants is now in the Mexican city of Guadalajara tonight.
Cody, you gotta hold the phone up to your face when you're laughing, waving it all
Seriously,
over the place.
Man.
We need the laughter in order for all of it to work, Cody. It can't be coughing and laughing away from the phone. We need you to hold it near your face. See, this is what happens. I mean, he forgets he's on the radio while thinking he's on the radio, and he's not on the radio. He's on a podcast. He's just doing, there he goes.
He's on a phone.
He's shadow boxing again. Greg, you're on with us. We need your help. Right. We need your sounds. We need your laughter.
Yeah, that was funny, but I feel guilty laughing at that because it sounds like in the middle of saying that word, Lou Dobbs had a stroke. It really does. I'm a little concerned for Lou. Well, I hope he's okay.
The caravan of mostly Central American immigrants is now in the Mexican city of Guadalajara tonight.
I mean, he finished the sentence, Greg.
Well, I mean, no, here's what it actually sounds like, because Amin, who works porny as a pirate, Amin had the correct description when he told me on the phone, go ahead and tell the people, Amin, what it is that this actually sounds like. And then once Amin says this, you will hear and see it for yourself. You might even imagine Lou Dobbs doing it, because play the sound after Amin describes what it is he's going to describe here.
In the movies, when a man is at a dinner table and the woman begins to service him under the table, unbeknownst to the other diners there, mid-sentence, he'll make this noise.
The caravan of mostly Central American immigrants is now in the Mexican city of Guadalajara tonight.
You're right.
Guadalajara.
So She's got it in the right spot.
But not only that, not only did she get it in, or he get it in the right spot, but now you have to imagine, no. The one being filleted, oh yeah, it's Lou Dobbs. It's not just some guy being serviced under a table. No, it's under the news decks. It's under the news desk, and it is motherfucking Lou Dobbs.
Waffle da.
Are you guys surprised that the ratings for the Super Bowl are the lowest since 2007?
I am not. First off, the game was not that good. Secondly, I'm telling you, I said this yesterday. In the pandemic, 6:30 feels like 10:30 at night. Like, there was no reason for that game to be on that late. And I think people are just tired and they're cranky and they were like, enough already. I'm waiting around.
I think this is happening with old people. I think a lot of old people are agreeing with Stugatz that 6:30 is the new 10:30. Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo. During the pandemic, is 6:30 the new 10:30?
I feel like Stugatz is kind of emblematic of a bigger issue in television ratings talk, which is the reason why I am not watching is the reason why everyone else. The reason why the ratings are down is because the Super Bowl is a gathering event people who are not interested in sports get together with other people. In a pandemic, if you're not going to other people's houses, then you're losing on a wide chunk of audience that is not going to watch a sporting event just because, hey, I want to put this on TV. No, it's because you get together at a party and you watch it with 12 other people.
Well, couldn't the counter argument be that large gatherings actually hurt Super Bowl ratings? Because if people are staying at home, you're more likely to get TVs with meters that are actually staying at home and watching the game.
Correct.
But you're also more likely to have a gathering.
Not during a pandemic.
No. I'm saying you're more likely to have a gathering when there isn't a pandemic.
But Chris, the ratings are about how many TVs are on viewing the game. It's not about how many people you have at your house.
But how many people entertain when they otherwise wouldn't watch a sporting event because it's just a thing that you do. It's like it's a Sunday to get a bunch of people together at your house to watch a thing together.
I would thought it would be advantageous to the Super Bowl ratings to actually have a pandemic because people aren't going to bars. People aren't doing the large gatherings. So you would have more individual TVs, thus boosting the chances of TVs with meters actually tuning into this game.
Guys, you're overthinking this. It's a real easy explanation. People used to tune into the Super Bowl, not for the Super Bowl, but for the ads. Now they start doing the ads a week in advance on YouTube and on Instagram. Why do I need to tune into the Super Bowl? I've seen all these ads already. That's why the ratings are down.
It could be all of those things as well, though, right? Does it have to be any one? I mean, you really stamped
it.
It has to be just one. Okay,
that's
very good.
Yeah, it's just
so
that.
If it has to be just one, it has been ordained. Let's go back again to Stugatz weirdly announcing Marty Schottenheimer's death in a way that had way too much enthusiasm in it, the way that you would announce a birthday greeting to somebody somehow.
Mike, Marty Schottenheimer passed away.
It's unbelievable.
It's like a new movie that just came out, you know, and he's reading the paper. Oh, the movie's out.
Mike, Marty Schottenheimer passed away. Oh, look, a new Indiana Jones. Mike, Marty.
Billy, Ryan Baldinger.
Baldy.
Had a very quick, he can always leap into action. He's a superhero that way. It's unbelievable. He can, at any angle, get in there and just throw out a nickname at me that hits me in the face like a wet dick. So,
a wick.
Brian Baldinger has some slow motion that he does. I love this, Stugatz. I love when these analysts who really know football slow everything down for us because we're not watching the game the same way that the people who actually know what they're watching are watching. So Mina Kimes can tell you that the one guy on the Tampa defensive line that I wasn't thinking about on Sunday, it's not Pierre Paul, it's not Barrett, it's not I and Ndamukong Suh is somebody who I don't understand physically how he does what he does, never gets hurt, always plays across a decade, that sport, that way, at that position. The guy that Mina Kimes would tell you might have been the MVP defensively of the game for Tampa to make Kansas City look a way we've never seen before is Viavea. Is that how you pronounce it?
Viavea.
Viavea.
You're missing a T, I think.
How do we pronounce it?
Viavea.
Vitavea.
Of course.
I'm sorry. Now I've made him a little Italian. Vitavea.
Vitavea.
350 pounds. Mina Kimes is saying a guy with one tackle in the game. Yeah. One tackle in the game was more responsible for everything that was happening out there than anyone else.
Well, you remember when Tampa Bay got stuffed at the goal line? The old MVP should have finished his block. All right, because I brought him in on that gimmick play, and he got stuffed on the line because he thought his dude was in. So no MVP.
Okay, no MVP. But Baldinger is saying that, and I wondered what Billy would say to this. He was slowing everything down and was saying, are you aware of how well Mahomes played in that game? Because he was showing blitzes on the corner coming in uncovered, untouched, and just all the places that he made some throws where his receivers let him down, where he's hitting guys in the face mask from 30 yards out, parallel to the floor, a throw no one in the world can make, and his receivers were letting him down. He was breaking it down that way, Billy, and it sort of flew in the face of what you were saying yesterday, which is, did Mahomes play well? Yes or no?
No. Good for him. You know who played better? Harrison Butker. He got all the points for their team. Okay? Please. Patrick Mahomes. How about do something, anything? Run around. Throw a pass. Do something.
Run around? It's literally all he did was run around, and he made amazing passes that were like hit people in the face.
Yeah, no, I don't know if he knows this. You need to run forwards, not backwards in the NFL. You need to get in positive yards, not yet negative yards, and you need to complete passes, not incomplete passes. I don't think it's even called incomplete in that sense, but do something, all right? Why can I ask you something? Why does everyone have to be so great? Why do we have to say he played so great? Why is that the case? Why can we just say, you know what? He's supposed to be the next big thing. Didn't really live up to it. A little disappointing. Can't it just be that? Can't we be a little bit disappointed with the performance he had? No, we can't.
No, he's amazing. Uh-huh. He's literally the best quarterback I've ever seen. Guys, there I said it. Better than Aaron Rodgers.
In the history of the NFL, 28 of 49, 270 yards, 5.5 per reception. No touchdowns, zero interceptions, at a rating of 52.3. That's not good. And Billy is right. And shame on Baldinger. He should be ashamed of himself for trying to be different and point out, like, listen, I'm not dumb. I watched the game. He didn't play well. Don't try to tell me he played well, Baldinger. Seriously. I mean, I know what I'm watching. I'm watching football. I've been watching it for 40 years, and that quarterback did not play well in a big spot, and he deserves to be criticized for it.
Here's how to quantify that Patrick Mahomes was under constant siege. Analytics figured out that he ran the equivalent of 500 yards in that game, and most of it was backtracking, and you could tell his toe wasn't right because he was having an awful tough time getting distance between himself and 300-pound linemen who were rushing. 500 yards he ran.
He is getting surgery, Bill, just so you know.
Ah, whatever. Who cares? Guys, I hate to break it to you. This is part of football. They rush the quarterback, okay? That's part of the game. You need to figure out how to get the ball out and complete it to people. Are we supposed to just not rush Patrick Mahomes and let him complete passes? He was playing against the, you know, there's two teams playing, right, that are trying to win the Super Bowl. It's not just let Patrick Mahomes win the Super Bowl every year.
Billy, if that's the case, then Eric Fisher is the MVP of the Chiefs and the MVP of the NFL. It's not Patrick. If that's what he looks like without Eric Fisher, then he's not that good.
I've been saying it all season.
You guys know what this is. This is all sports media hipsterism. It happens in every
sport.
People trying to show they're smarter. They're going to pull an advanced analytic that proves, oh, you thought he was terrible. He was actually excellent. It's actually the best Super Bowl that's ever been played by a quarterback. But you plead to just too dumb to figure it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the random, obscure basketball jersey of sports journalism.
Well, this is what's funny about some of what's happening right now. First of all, Greg Cody, very vigorously, very confidently, he spoke into his landline, and he thought he had something for us that hadn't been covered ad nauseum the last 36 hours, which is that Patrick Mahomes ran the length of five football fields in loops trying to get away from people. Greg Cody came to that stat very proudly. I thought you hated advanced stats. Counting the number of yards a quarterback ran around, according to next-gen stats, aren't you always saying, don't give me that information, it's useless?
Yeah, it's don't give me that information unless it benefits me. I don't mind tracking the distance the guy has run. What's ridiculous is when you have to tell me that during those 500 yards of backtracking, he averaged 3.8 miles per hour speed. You know, that's what I don't need to know. By the way, in my Zoom right now, Amin El-Hassan is backlit like a messiah, which is perfect because he's the first three-time guest on the Greg Cody Show podcast. which this week's episode welcomes in Stu Gotts as our special guest. So tune into that wherever you get your pods.
That came out of nowhere.
Can we just call it what it is, Stu Gotts, this advanced stats nonsense? Can we just... It's excuse stats. That's what it is. These things exist so you can just pick and choose which one gives you the best excuse for your argument. It's excuse stuff. Oh, he ran 6,000 yards in the wrong direction. Well, run in the right direction.
Okay. Get rid of the ball quicker. How about that?
I don't know. I don't know at this point whether Stu Gotts and Billy are doing maximum volume impersonations.
What do you mean?
Of Stu Gotts's, but... One of the things that Baldinger was pointing out that seems to be eluding Billy and Stu Gotts in the analysis is the sheer number of receivers on, for example, 3rd and 8 who just dropped the ball in their face mask. And after that, Mahomes can't get a new set of downs because he can't also catch the football. And he was just pointing out 4 plays specifically that no one in the history of the sport can make outside of this guy. And all 4 of them, but one of them was Kelsey, one of them was Hill. They're dropping balls that they should be catching. They normally catch.
There's 3 drop passes, and I would argue that no one in the league can make those plays because Patrick Mahomes didn't make those plays either. They were incompletions.
Okay, so fair enough. But in the analysis afterward... I love this part of it because there I don't have the person to credit this on, so forgive me for not crediting properly. But somebody put up that Stephen A., after the Nets lost that game to the Wizards, that Stephen A., the graphic under his name was worried about the Nets after the Nets had lost to the Wizards. And then literally 2 days later, after the Nets beat the Clippers, Stephen A., who's covered basketball for 30 damn years and knows what he's talking about basketball, the graphic under him 2 days later is Brooklyn going to finals is what it says 2 days later. And I feel like what we're talking about with Mahomes and that game we just saw is the maximum of the stupidity of quarterback stat that is not a quarterback stat is wins. That game showed you when you just take the numbers that are so obvious. One quarterback played under pressure, the other did not. End stop. Like, you don't need to go any further than that. Like, it's very obvious that if I put Mahomes in Tampa's huddle, what do you think I would have gotten from Mahomes? It sure as shit wouldn't have been a bunch of dink downs to tight ends and running backs. Like, they would have been able to throw the ball down the field because you would have had all the time in the world.
But that's making it, for me at least, too simple. Like, the defense played really, really well for the Buccaneers. The fact that the Chiefs made absolutely no adjustments when they were... Mahomes said after the game, they're taking away the deep ball. They're taking away the sidelines. They didn't try anything different in the second half.
That's what failure ends up looking like. But you go ahead and put any quarterback in the history of the league under that kind of pressure. 0 of them are succeeding. Because if that guy can't get more than 9 points, nobody can. Nobody can. Like, it's clear that he was playing a game under more duress than any quarterback who played this entire season.
Right. On dropbacks first half, he was pressured 58% of the time. And Brady was like 5% of the time.
But that you say it's too simple. It is that simple. Any quarterback in the history of the sport, including the one who's the greatest winner ever, go look at his stats under pressure. All of them. You hit them up the middle. You're finishing them.
Yep.
All of them. But you're asking these guys to be some level beyond human.
No. Well, I'm not. But I'm also like, listen, what I don't want is for someone trying to make a point and telling me when I watch football my entire life that Mahomes played well. I don't care what the reasons are. I understand there are reasons. Offensive line, injuries, running game, that work. I get all that. Drops. Get it. He didn't play well.
But why can't the analysis be, okay, fine. Period. Stop. He didn't play well. No, but why can't the analysis?
Because when he, I'll tell you why.
Well,
because
can
when
I finish?
He, yes. Sorry.
Why can't the analysis be that nobody would have played well under those circumstances?
Because this is why it cannot be that, Dan. When he does play well, do you ever hear, "Hey, Eric Fisher, great job."
Yes.
Hey, wide receivers, great job.
Yes. No, you praise his offensive line all the time.
No, you don't. Also, all you hear is Patrick Mahomes. It's all you heard with the Bucs. Tom Brady. That's it.
Also, that's not the analysis that people were putting out there. They're not saying he didn't play well because of this. They're saying he actually did play well. You don't know what you're watching. This is a stat that tells you he actually played well. He played better than Tom Brady. He actually won the Super Bowl. You missed it.
Very passionate about this.
Well, Mike.
I care about this, man.
So do I. I'm tired of you guys with Mahomes already. Jesus.
Mike just got his eyebrows blown off. What is it? Was it my volume and caring about
sports?
So
loud, caring about Patrick Mahomes so much. Chris's mic is so much louder than everybody else's. I got one pot. It's just, guys, relax. Patrick Mahomes
is a
Super
Bowl winner. Do we make him a special trophy because he didn't win, but it wasn't his fault?
It feels like he's right. Like, you guys still want to give him a ring. It's like,
yeah, what do we do here?
Is this better?
You know what?
MVP?
I love that idea, Billy. I love the idea of giving one trophy once a year to, you know what? You didn't win, but it's not your fault. Here's the trophy. It's not a second place trophy.
It's a not-your-fault trophy.
It's just like, you know what?
You know what?
It's like it's Aaron Rodgers losing that other game to Brady. You know what? You lost, but it's not your fault.
The
it's
trophy
okay.
should be one of his receivers getting hit in the face mask with a football.
That's right. That's what the trophy should be. One of them dropping the ball. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's not your fault.
You know what I'd be okay with? He could get LeSean McCoy's ring, and then it'll just have his stats on the side of the ring.
That's what you will allow?
Yeah. LeSean McCoy, back-to-back Super Bowls without playing a snap on either game. What is that?
Shady.
Attaboy.
Hey, it's Mike Ryan, and I've been watching sports for a long time now. As an adult, a lot has changed. A lot has changed since I turned 21 in the world, but once I was able to enjoy sports with the wonderful taste of Miller Lite, I knew that there was no topping this. I mean, I think back then, instant replay was barely used in other sports outside of football. So when I wanted to complain about referees, I would get all mad, and then I would take a sip of that Miller Lite, cool myself down, take a beat, and realize there are more important things, like the great taste of Miller Lite. Less filling, and only 96 calories, the original light beer since 1975. You remember all those old John Madden ads? I still view them on YouTube occasionally. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time! To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.